Townies, a monthly feature on KYMN Radio, is produced by Art Makers, bringing together artists with disabilities and local professional and student artists to create art together and build community. And now your hosts, Andrew Rosso and Betsy Spethman.
Our guest today is artist and naturalist Margaret Johnson, who tells the story behind the mural in Northfield's post office, shares the importance of place, and a gap year in Sweden 50 years ago. Plus, a short conversation in Swedish and Norwegian. Welcome to Townies.
Yes.
Welcome to Townies.
Thank you. I think this is a great, this is the best of local radio. I've listened to a couple of the segments it's fascinating.
I do want to let you know that this will be broadcast Sundaren på KYMN later on KYMN.
So, Margaret, welcome to Townies. We're delighted to have you. Our guest is Margaret Johnson to talk about posts and outposts. Margaret, one of my favorite things that you've contributed to Northfield is that absolutely beautiful mural that's on the wall inside that beautiful big wall inside the post office. And so we'd love to start our conversation there. How did that?
Northfield Arts Guild came up with a contest, a competition. They solicited possible designs for that large wall in the post office, above all those post office boxes that you see on the left as you enter. And they selected this design. And someone asked me, why did they choose this design rather than others that were submitted? And it was basically because it was not a Jesse James mural. I think Postmaster Bob had had enough of Jesse James, and he wanted something different. And
so tell us what you included in your design.
The natural history of Minnesota. And Minnesota has been, obviously, profoundly shaped by glaciers. So I started the design on the left side with the receding glaciers, and then the center of the design is primarily tall grass prairie, because I am fascinated with prairies. And I had done several designs during that era where I depicted the prairie grasses, which are, you know, like big bluestem can be 5 feet tall, but their roots are three times as long or deep. Prairie grasses are unbelievably deep, and I just thought that was fascinating. So I did a lot of prairie stuff, and then I included the big woods, because the big woods are another significant feature in our landscape. And then I included a little settlement of the Dakota Native Americans who lived in this area for many, many centuries, frankly. And then it kind of goes off to the right side, and I kind of crammed against the right-hand border the town with buildings that could indicate it was Carlton and St. Olaf and the Ames Mill, a couple churches. And actually, as I look at the design again today, I think John and Ann North are way too big. They're in the foreground, but they're kind of big, given the other emphases in this mural. But it's a panoramic mural that depicts the natural history of the area.
Margaret, tell us a little bit about what it was like actually painting it. What was the process of painting the mural?
Well, that was a fun process, because the original design was probably about a 12 by maybe 24 inch drawing, which in fact is in the Postmaster General's office. They kept the original. They essentially bought the original as part of the award for the mural. So it was a small drawing. And so what I did was I photographed the drawing in sort of segments, and then I projected it using an old-fashioned slide projector onto the wall and drew the outline of the various figures and trees and whatnot. And then invited people who were interested to come in and paint by number. I really wanted this to be a community project. So a lot of different people came in and painted different parts of the mural, Postmaster Bob had put up a big scaffolding in front of that wall, high enough so that people could get into their post office boxes during the day. And then when the post office lobby closed at like 6 p.m., that's when we moved in with our cans of paint, and people decided what they wanted to paint. And, you know, I remember distinctly Kay Brown, who was the director of the Arts Guild at the time. She was an excellent administrator, but she didn't have any artistic skill whatsoever. So she painted the stones that are embedded in the soil around the prairie grass's roots. And Ross Shoger, who was a biology professor at Carleton, Ross grew up on a farm, so he wanted to paint the black and white cow. There is a list to one side of the mural of all the people who helped paint by number. Yeah. So it was it was a big community project.
That's delightful. Yeah. And how long did it take? How long did everybody get the pleasure of working on it together?
Yeah, I think it took me probably about 4 or 5 days of projecting the image and drawing the outline. And then I think the following 2 weeks, people came in after hours, and we painted for 2 or 3 hours each evening until it was done.
And was there an unveiling or some kind of a celebration?
There was. I have old slides, I think, of, you know, the actual, I don't know if it's an unveiling so much as kind of a dedication. And I remember there's a picture of me sort of pontificating and explaining the imagery, and Postmaster Bob is standing next to me exactly. And, you know, some of the people who painted different things were there, of course. They were very pleased to see it all together. So, and the Arts Guild representatives are, of course, there because they had been partners in that project. So, yeah, it was a fun community event.
That's very cool. And so what kind of reaction did you get from people in the community after that dedication when it was finished? What kinds of response did you get?
Well, I remember people telling me that they were so glad there was a mural in the post office, because standing in line for minutes and then maybe more minutes, they at least now had something to look at and to think about. So they appreciated the distraction from the long lines that sometimes formed in front of the windows where the clerks were working. And other people were, I think, relieved that it wasn't a Jesse James theme. There were a couple of other murals in town at that time, like one on the Kuchera building at 2nd and Division, which has since been painted over, but it was a Jesse James themed mural. So I think people appreciated the, the non-Jesse James theme, just as a change in scenery around town. And then other people said that they really enjoyed kind of the natural history approach. And it was curious, because as I did a little research on post office murals, there are a lot of them in Minnesota, and I realize now this is going to be one of our travel ideas. I have a list now that I found online of all the murals that are in post offices around Minnesota. And as we travel around Minnesota, I'm going to check out some of these murals, see what else. And a lot of them were done, of course, during the Depression, 1938, 42, 41, 37. You know, those were sort of the primary years, and this was 1936. So
I'm curious as to when you became a Swedish speaker, because I've been a Norwegian speaker for a couple of years now.
I took a year between high school and college, which way, way back in the day was not known as a gap year, but that's what it's called nowadays. And I spent the year in Sweden at a folkhögskola, which is...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so I learned my Swedish there. It was kind of a, crash course immersion experience. But I did. I learned Swedish, and I have kept up reading Swedish. My speaking and comprehension have slipped a bit over the almost 60 years. No, 50-some years. But yes, I still read Swedish on a fairly regular basis.
What was it like for you when you were at the folkhögskola in Sweden?
In Sweden, I went to the Sigtuna Folkhögskola, which is halfway between Stockholm and Uppsala. And it is a beautiful old town.
Cool.
In fact, it's a medieval town, and the school was originally kind of a central location for the Swedish church, I guess.
Cool.
But it was a 3-year program for many students who were there, and many of them, the minimum age was 18, and then the oldest person in my class was 36, and a lot of these folks were there because for whatever reason they had gone through our equivalent of high school, but they hadn't gone on to university right away. And the courses that were offered at the Sigtuna Folkhögskola, once they completed them, qualified them for university entrance if they so chose. So for some people, it was a way of returning to school and getting the background they needed in order to go to university. So it was a very diverse group of people from all over Sweden. There was also a woman from Iceland who was there, because one of their focuses were Swedish traditions, Swedish language, Swedish music. So that was kind of extracurricular, but it gave a very strong sense of Swedish traditions and culture at that particular folkhögskola.
One of the sort of sensibilities in our culture that's grown a lot over the last, I'd say, 5 years,
mm-hmm.
is sense of place.
Mm-hmm.
And across Minnesota, acknowledging the place where Native Americans lived, as you say, for centuries.
Right.
Is that sort of cultural awareness of place and the history of places, do you find that that brings a new sensibility to your mural, which kind of looks at all of the different pieces of what's happened on this land?
Right. Yeah, I think it does. I think that this, as you say, this sort of heightened awareness of place and people really understanding more deeply why a landscape looks the way it does, how it functions. I mean, Northfield, it's patently clear that, on the east side of town and you go east toward the Minnesota or the Mississippi River, there are no lakes. You go west of town and you go west of I-35 and there are all kinds of little lakes dotted out there. And that's all because of the way the glaciers deposited, various types of soils after, as they receded. The rivers that we have, the lakes that we have, the Kettle Hole marshes, I mean, all these things, it's very distinct. So I think that sense of place, and certainly I think we're learning the indigenous history goes back a long ways. And in fact, as we talk about climate change now, the Native Americans, they were seasonal. So they would spend time in the Minnesota River Valley in the winters where it was sort of sheltered. That was a major place of gathering in the winter. And in the summers, they would go up onto the bluffs above the Minnesota River. And this was when the Minnesota River was the ancient River Warren. Before the Minnesota was the Minnesota River, it was the River Warren. It was basically the runoff from Glacial Lake Agassiz that covered the Dakotas. And it was so much water that was released that it carved, if you'll notice, the Minnesota River Valley is very wide and it's very straight until it hits Mankato and then it suddenly takes a corner. Actually the weather was changing about 10,000 years ago, which is one reason that Lake Agassiz began to melt. The glaciers were receding. Lake Agassiz was melting. The River Warren began to flow, and the Native Americans were there to see how it was changing. So whereas they used to be able to winter in the valley when the river was frozen, and they would go up on the bluffs in the summer, it turned out that the river began to shrink pretty noticeably to what we think of today, which is kind of a modest-sized river in a huge river valley. And so it really changed their seasonal locations and how they use the different areas. So they were, I always thought that the ancient River Warren was, long before anybody was here. Well, in fact, Indigenous people were here, and they saw that change in climate, which I think is fascinating, and they adapted accordingly and moved, their locations and their hunting grounds to other places. So, I don't know, I was just kind of intrigued by the fact that the Indigenous history goes back even farther than I imagined. So you can see that my interest in place and why places look the way they do goes back a ways, and it is infinitely interesting to me.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me. This has been a real pleasure.
Our guest has been Margaret Johnson. If there's a townie you would like to hear about, email us at artmakers.mn@gmail.com. Now stay tuned for a short conversation in Swedish and Norwegian between Andrew and Margaret.
Senran på K I M N.
How's your Norwegian, Margaret? Margaret is a Swedish speaker.
K E M N. The K E M N that I got, you bet. Ja visst. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Senran på K I M N. Later on KYMN.
Oh, senare. Senare. In Swedish, it would be senare. Senare på what is it? K-E-M-N.
Yeah. They're really similar.
They don't want
yes,
to
they
think
are
they're
quite
very similar.
Similar
sometimes.
That's true.
But they're similar.
No.
You've been listening to Townies, a monthly feature on KYMN Radio with host Andrew Rosso and Betsy Spethman. Townies is produced by ArtMakers, bringing together artists with disabilities with local professional and student artists to create art together and build community. Tune in on the first Thursday of each month for Townies.